Thursday, the 28th of January, Yud Gimel, Shvat, Rabbi Michael Scharf, Fruit and Veg and More.
Good morning once again. Again, I have the honor to stand here. I was just on the way here. I said I'm going to share with you one of my feelings when I come here. Although it's not so easy to come early morning, all the way from Stanford, the Intex, probably an hour drive with all the traffic, but definitely worthwhile. But I think I want to take this opportunity, first of all, to thank the Northwest Railway that he gave me personally and give us, as a cautious organization in London, to express and perhaps more to explain some reason of topics which come along from time to time. And I think this is a place that we always are open and discuss and explain, and everyone can share and enjoy the view in any way. So first I would like to thank to give us this opportunity. I'm standing today on behalf of our esteemed Rav Agon Rabbeinu Weitz, which I think he was supposed to speak this morning. I had no choice but to take him away this week and send him away to California on the urgent mission. So Master, he didn't really enjoy his trip because it was quite difficult. Yeah, next time. Okay, I'll just next time ask Rabbi Weitz to share with you his agenda. And I spoke to him just about 3 hours ago. So it wasn't so easy, but I think I'll share with you one of the things of the finding, which is also a little bit to Chamish Osor Bishvat, and it's a new thing, which for me myself was a very great finding. Rabbi Weitz, I think everybody knows, he is part of our team in the Kashrus, not just as a Mashgir, but a very high head, controlling, understanding, and so on. He went to California on a yearly basis to check the nuts for Pesach. Nuts for Pesach, we have discovered in 2000 that it's not so straightforward. Yeah, I don't want to go into the Pesach issue because maybe we'll have an opportunity to discuss about this Pesach. But interesting finding we find last night is, last year, about 3 weeks before Pesach, we were just about to pack pistachio nuts for Pesach, which come from California. We don't allow it for Pesach from different countries. And I don't know if the public is aware, but there was a huge alert in America about salmonella in pistachio nuts. Salmonella. In the pistachio nuts they ever found. So we straight away stopped the product. It took a couple of days for the FDA to come up and to decide which batches, which companies, and so on. We got a green light from the lawyers in America. Obviously, the product went on the market. It was a further test in the UK. It was no problem. Since then, the FDA in America have come out with a new regulation that all the nuts need to be pasteurized before they are processed. We're talking about raw nuts, not because blanched almond, for example, they are anyway steamed to remove the shell, the skin, the brown skin and so on. But the raw nuts, they must be pasteurized with live steam injection, which will kill any bacteria, anything whatsoever. Then they are dried to go back to their natural appearance and state, because you don't want to lose the skin. So it's a very specialized process. You can't just take nut and put steam and dry it. You're going to lose the peel and the appearance of the raw nut. So it's a very specialized. Well, there are very few companies doing it. Yesterday, after the visit to the nuts company, when we discovered it, he drove another 3 hours. They waited for him, and he saw the process. The process is a simple process, a live steam injection into nuts and drying the nuts. However, since there are very few companies who are doing this pasteurization process, the question obviously was, do they do anything else? So, do they make chometz? Do they make kidneys? Do they make in the same time? Does it cause any problem? And they did appear that could be very problematic. So in the particular the company that we went, which Rabbi White went yesterday, he reported back that they do make some peanuts, which peanuts wouldn't cause much of a problem for Pesach, because only kidneys, they don't do it in the same time. But there are some different companies who pasteurize different under cereals and grain. So it's a new alert which came up, especially for Pesach. It's not a concern so far, we haven't found for all year round, but I'm talking about for Pesach could be problematic. So this is, I'm just sharing on his behalf one of the findings, and obviously we need to study a bit more and to find out what it is. Going to cover our topic, one of the things which I've been asked to talk is to explain the issue of the tin cone alert, which the rabbinate have come out the last, I think, 3 months on the issue to not to eat tin cones without a hechsher. Now, tin cones process, first of all, I think we need to explain. Basically, tin cones are the normal corn on the cob that we see growing around, and we have frozen and so on. The cones arrive into the factories, and they are basically cut with special knives to remove the kernels out of the cob. The kernels are dropped into big baths to be washed, to remove all the small debris and small pieces, and a lot of seeds attached around. The cob himself is quite interesting, have a lot of sugar in it. And it's then taken to different companies where it's extracted, the sugar inside is extracted, and we see lately a huge amount of xylitol. It's a sugar substance, which is, in fact, extraction of the sugar in the cob. Nothing gets wasted. The last few meat also goes back to animal feed. The xylitol, in fact, was a discussion if it's kosher le Pesach or not, because it comes out of the corn. The corn is kidneys. Is the cob also subject to that? The Psaki given, no, it's not kidneys, because it's completely from the corn, the green to that. So this is something very interesting.
But why is it not kidneys?
Because the cob himself does not go into the problem categories of kidneys, you know, between the seed or grain or such a thing, which may, it's another issue. So it was only extraction, so this is the xylitol, but the kernels themselves are cut, removed, washed, and then blanched, slightly blanched, in bath with boiling water.
Not this chemicals.
No. With plain water, boiling water. The kernels are then put into the tins, and there are a little bit of solution, which is a bit of water, basically added. Sometimes a bit of salt is added. If a mixture of peppers is want to be added, then it's also added. The tins are sealed and then sent to retort. Retort are massive ovens where you put all the tins into special trays. You seal the ovens, and each oven can contain thousands and thousands of tins. You put live steam injection on top of the tins, obviously before the labeling is done, and you then leave it for approximately half an hour, depending on the type of the product and the quality. And after usually an hour, 90 minutes, the corn is ready cooked, taken out, cooled, and then labeled and dispatched. Now, the halacha in the Bishon HaKom, I think we mentioned already, is there anything which is eino oyla shulchan melochim, do not need Bishul Yisrael. There's two conditions. One, nechel chai, if anything is eaten raw, like carrots, peas, and so on, does not need Bishul Yisrael, even if a goy did cook it. And also, oyle al shulchan melochim, which is, if something, although it's not edible raw, but it's oyle al shulchan melochim, so it's machel choshuv, so does require Bishul Yisrael. That's three takunas chachomim is given. The question was always, and it was taken, that corn, it's not machel, which is oyle al shulchan melochim. It's something which is eaten, the last probably 20, 30 years coming to the market, really, Lechatchila, this is something which was more done for animal feed and so on. But lately the quality have changed and so on, and it is used as a food, not only at home, but it been discovered that caterers using it in chasanas. Now, Oilat Shechem Malachim is difficult, it's very gray area and subject to a lot of opinion, machloike between the achronim. How do you categorize where, what, we're talking royal family, so in a place that they don't have any royalty, so there's no bishul akum and so on. So the answer really to the opinion of the alekdoila achronim is, we're not talking about royal family here, because we don't want to go to such an extreme, Chazal never want to be misaken, someone gonna get married to the royal family. We're talking about the normal public, which is a normal chasana, malchei rabbonim, and we're talking about a wedding. Usually a wedding is the principle which is taken. So something which is served in a wedding or in a, I would say, a posh hotel. Usually one of the research used to be like a Ritz hotel, which is a high class hotel, and but yet not the royal style in a sense, but if they do serve it, it means that it can be served and attract this type of customers. So it has been shown that this is a product which is served on various occasions in a wedding, and it's part of the menu. So if someone wants to choose, he can choose it. So mainly it has shown that it is a makel choshu. And therefore the rabbinate have decided if it's a makel choshu, then we got a problem of bishul. Bishul Akum, and this is the reason why they have changed and have gone to the decision, so you need to have Bishul Yisrael and the Kohen. Now, something which is important to know, a lot of people ask, what happened? I mean, 20 years ago was okay, now how can a product change? So I think in Bishul Yisrael and Bishul Akum, it's very important to know that the Gzeres Chazal was with a reason, because intermarriages. So, and the aloha is hakoy lifi hazman v'lifi hamokon. So we can have, for example, a product which here requires Bishul Yisrael, and just few miles down the road, in another country or another city perhaps, which they don't use it as food, in a high quality food or something like that, do not require Bishul Yisrael. Or the opposite, for example, if here a product we don't eat nechel chai, we don't eat a draw, only kut, which will require Bishul Yisrael, in another country which will eat a draw, it will not require Bishul Yisrael. So it's all lefi ha-mokoim and lefi ha-zman.
Who are they worrying about assimilation? The people attending the food or the cook and the...
Okay, it's a very, very big question, and the question... It deserves a huge debate because it's a machlokes or achronim. I don't want to go into it, because I just want to go into it, but I just want to quote you two things. The question was simple. Either according to the people who are cooking the food, or the people who are eating the food. To explain the question, I'll tell you, for example, we are here in England and we got in France. So let's take, for example, that in France they don't serve the corn on chasnas or such a thing, or different thing, or they eat a product raw. For example, beetroot in France is a lot eaten raw. And I've been to a factory of beetroot, and they just crack the beetroot, they eat it like that, a bit hard in the teeth. But they like it. You cut it in cube, you eat it. It's good and healthy. So if there it's prepared, it's cooked there, so it's nechel chai, or anywhere shulchan rochim in the country or the place of preparation, then it's sent to another place where here, for example, it's not Oilei Shulchan Lochim, or it's Oilei Shulchan Lochim, or it's Enon Echel Chai, where are you going? According to the preparation or into where you're eating? It's a big, big machloikas. And to explain, because some people don't have the difficulty to understand, where if it's also there, for example, if in France would have been also the vice versa, and he comes here, will it become a mutter here, and so on? Could have been. So it's a very big machluk, the achronim, some achronim said you're taking from the issue from both sides, if there is prepared, it's a machluk, as the Rav Falk have written a long tshuva, and the Rav Weiss and so on, there is a lot of discussion in it. I must say that it is a big part of the issue in Tincon, because Tincon is not producing in the UK. It's the the best corn basically comes out of the French market, Green Giant, it's very well known, and America have some good corn. The rest come with the Far East, which the quality is much less, and so on. So definitely is a part of the question. Moving on a little bit, I think at least clarified the issue of the... however, I just want to mention that the tin corn is only about the kernels, not about the baby corn. The baby corn, which come in tins, never was under the issue, because baby corn is really Nechel Chai. You can buy it in a packet, you can eat it, you can cut it, put a bit of dressing, and you can eat it. So it's quite interesting. I must admit that the notice wasn't clear enough on this aspect. People thought that it was taken for granted that corn is the tin corn, baby corn have different name and so on, but it's worthwhile mentioning it, and I'm taking opportunity here to clarify it for any people who want to know. Going to the Chamisha Tobi Shvat, obviously one of the main issues is also the Minag Yisrael to its many parents, but I think there is another thing which one needs to be very careful is Toiloim issue, which infestation in a lot of fruit, especially in the dried fruit issue. I'm going to pick up two or three things and to explain various shilas which we find in dried fruit. One of them is the raisins. Dry raisin is basically a grape which is left either on the vineyard to dry it, then dropped onto the floor, on the ground. They put a net on the ground, and then the grapes is dropped onto the floor and dried like that, left for quite a few months in a hot weather. It goes in up to December and so on, and later on is taken into the factories where it's kept in dry places, and if they need to remove the moisture, they will even put it in special hot cabinets, not really ovens, to dry the moisture. But since the product is very dirty and dusty because it's been left dried in the open air, need to be washed. Once you wash it, you start removing the internal sugar which is in the grapes, start coming out on the surface, and when you dry it again later on, you'll find that the raisins start to stick together, which is no good for the customer, they don't like it, and so on. So what do? They put vegetable oil around. Vegetable oil... sorry. Vegetable oil, which is used for the raisins, it mainly comes out from one factory in Holland. A specialized type of oil, which is used for the raisin industry around the world, practically. And this company is manufactured a special type of oil in Holland, which the oil is kosher. They ship it to California. I've been to, I think, six or seven companies in California who produce raisin, which have no problem. Thank you very much. They all use... would be surprised if one day would come up well. Well, in New York, they have problems to lower in water as well. So it's fine. So, the coated raisin in the market with vegetable oil usually come from California, there's no problem. Turkey, Greece as well, they're all buying from the same place. From the kosher place. So really, no, it's not kosher place. It's a kidney oil actually, and could be even worse because in the oil contains some citric acid in the preparation of the oil for the raisin. So the citric acid today could be either kidneys or chometz as well. So obviously not for Pesach. About the one who want to use a raisin, think to buy untreated raisin, which it exists on the market, especially for the bakery industry, which have no oil. Although I don't want to go into it, and mustn't forget, it's a big machlux, the Ramo steht in the Pesach, you're not allowed to eat dried frucht on Pesach, because they used to coat it with flour, which is the fact still today. In Africa, dried apricot contains white flour as an anti-sticking agent to stop the stickiness. And again, because the sugar, once you dry it, the sugar starts, the figs are coated with a powder as well, which is very difficult to know if it's flour or not. But going back to the raisin, something interesting is that the coated raisin, which comes from Australia, is more problematic. In Australia, they use their own oil, which they manufacture on site. And it's manufactured, they have two factories who produce this type of oil in Australia. One of them, which have no problem with kashers, and the second one, who produce lard as well. So, mamash treffen a fat, mamash animal fat on the same equipment. And I admit that it is a vegetable oil. However, because the vegetable oil which they use for the raising is refined and processed on animal fat manufacturing machinery, which is impossible to kasher. We need to understand that the refinery is like a massive fryer, like we know, greasy, and it's a massive tanks. You can't wash them. Oil and water don't go together. It's impossible to remove all type of things. So what they do is to call it vegetarian. They run through a bit of vegetable oil beforehand, which is sent as non-grade food, not food grade, or for people who are not marked or whatever. And then they call it vegetable oil. This oil, obviously, it's not kosher, and it's used for the raisin. Therefore, we do not allow any coated raisin which come from Australia. But the rest of the world, we haven't found any problem. Apricots, like we mentioned before, have no issue as such. Dried apricot, apart from the toluene issue, which can be found internally, which is a high infestation, one of the things which you need to be careful to open it up, and the rice powder which is coated on it. The rest is, for example, if we're looking at Shiva Saminim dates, there are two types of dates on the market. There are Californian dates, who are pure dried dates, which have nothing added to it. The other dates, we can see probably a lot of them, which is called Eat Me, one of the brand name. In a small box, exactly. A small presentation box of, I think, 200 gram or something. You'll have like a tray with... okay, so those type of dates are selected date to fit the box, the size, and so on. To make this date more shiny, more nicely appearance, they put a glycerol on top, which is basically a blend of glucose and glycerine and fatty acid, which could be problematic. Now, I must say that most of the dates which come usually from Tunisia or Algeria, we made some research under the Kashrut Authority. I spoke to even a Rav who went there. Because it comes to those type of the country who are makpid for themselves, not with any animal base, we know that they glycerol it's kosher. So we know it's not a problem. As far as kashrut is concerned, we can see on the ingredient today need to be declared it contains glucose, glycerol, something, another one or two ingredients. However, the sugar, the extra of sugar, which they add on the date, cause infestation. Because it makes the product much more sweeter, much more processed ready, and the infestation in those dates, it's incredible. It's very, very, very high. You can find, if you find one date in the packet with any infestation, you know that you can throw away the whole packet, because it will probably run between one and each other. So ideally is to avoid using this type of date, because it's very difficult to start checking them. And the infestation in dates are not only inside when you open it to remove the kernels, are between the skin and the flesh of the date. Especially in this type of dates, you'll find that the skin separate from the flesh. Mashenken, if you look into Californian dates, for example, you know, we're talking about all California, can we have become very American here. But the quality of them is quite good, and the skin is very attached, still part of the flesh of the date, because there was nothing between this, was nothing added, and if you have a worm crawling, obviously you start making some gap and air between them. So date is very complicated, although I must say they are available on the market, normal dates, not from California, from Algeria to Tunisia as well, without any coating on it. Yeah, but this don't come in the small boxes. It's usually the box of half a kilo, a kilo, and so on. And this is the one usually which is done for Pesach. Figs, it's also very high infestation, very, very high. And usually they come from the bottom of the of the feet with a small hole, they go into it. And the problem is that you can't even rely from the outside. The outside looks so beautiful, and you can't rely that anything appear inside. Usually sometimes you can see a hole, black or anything like that, because the tefillin which goes inside goes usually when they are very small, and they just goes into the hole tiny little, and they grow slowly inside. When you open it, it's very difficult to see the insect. And the reason for that is because figs, if you want, the flesh of the internal of the figs, it's like, I wouldn't say worms, but straight string basically moving along. So, and the insect which goes inside is exactly the same way. So it's, you need to be very careful when you cut the fig. I'm talking about fresh figs. Fresh. I'll come to dry in a minute. The fresh, which the fibers inside are white, the same color as the insect. So you need to cut it in half, really, and to open it by turning around upside down, you know, to turn around the flesh to bring out the fibers, and then obviously you can recognize, but you really need to be very careful to check, look through, and to see the difference between the worms and the fibers which move on, because they are actually the same thing. There is a method to do it. Not very appetizing, because it's better not to eat the figs. It's taking the figs, simply dip it in water and shake it in the water. The worms will straight away come out of the fig. But I don't know what left.
The open fig?
The open fig. Obviously, once it's closed, yeah, it can't come out. Only once it's open, you dip it in water, usually it will come out. But obviously, you left with no fig, so there's no point.
No, you have to take away the skin and dip the fig in water.
Now, a dried fig, again, the problem, once you dry the figs, it turn brown, everything through there, because the sugar starts to caramelize, and then the insect is there inside as well, turn around with the caramel of the figs. So you need to open it and to check it, and you really could see it, because the worms will turn around much darker than the fiber of the figs. So you can straight away, you can see it. If you cut it, you open it, you turn around upside down, you could see if there is any change in color. Now, many times you see lumps of certain things in the figs. Not always mean that it's an insect. It could be just is pure caramelized sugar sometimes in certain places. We need to be careful. Remove it and make sure that it is not an insect. It could be done, it needs to be checked. This is in the, you know, here, Baruch Hashem, we are fortunate in the UK, in England, that we have all fresh fruit, and we don't eat so much, especially for Chamish Osol Mishrat, we don't eat all the dry fruit. You go in that soil, there's no such a thing, kimat, as fresh fruit. Now, everyone in Chamish Osol, you buy dried fruit, and that's it. The other issue which can be worth mentioning is dried fruit, like papaya, pineapple, mangoes, and those type of things, which a lot is used all year round, as well as this time of the Chamish Osol Mishrat. This product mainly come from the Far East, a little bit from South America, Costa Rica quite high in pineapple, but the main production is Thailand, Philippines, those are two countries, recently from China also a little bit, although a bit poor quality, but mainly is Thailand is the biggest market. Now, the problem with this dried fruit is, if we're talking about dried pineapple, mangoes, and such, which have no additive whatsoever, there's no problem to it. There is three ingredients which are added to the dried fruit. To produce a dried, almost finished, I'm just going to tell you, the fruit is cut in cube, put in drying ovens for approximately 2 weeks to remove all the moisture. Then they either add sugar or coloring, if they want to have a nicer color, and flavoring. Now the flavoring can be quite problematic, especially because it's a powder type of flavor, which can be manufactured on tape equipment and so on. If it would have been just pure natural dried fruit, shouldn't be any problem. So if one travels around anywhere and want to eat something, I must mention Rabbi White left in few hours, in Mamish, in literally 2 hours before the travel, and he left all his food here. And he arrived there, he didn't have what to eat. He asked me, what can we eat in California? So I told him, after he visited to the nut factory, at least maybe he will have some nuts to eat. But so if we're looking at the dry food, it's very important to know that we must check. The one who wants to buy without a Hechsher, you need to check that he said clearly no additive. Can be sulfur dioxide as a preservative is one thing, but if it contains flavor, we know that certain companies do add flavor and don't declare it, although it's completely illegal. It's against the law. If you put flavoring, you must add it. So if you buy a normal brand, yeah, usually we'll always say it. But this is one of the issues which can be in the dry food. So the main message is to be careful all the things what we eat because of the infestation. The second thing, I'll finish with it, I'll say the brochures of various products are not, and fruit, what we take, it's not as simple as we say. Papaya, for example, is a big machloek if you are domoho or AIDS. Passion fruit, it's a questionable. Physalis, I think, something which make all... Physalis is a small orange berry in a petals and thing. It's probably Adoma and so on. So I think brochas is also very important. And actually helping it should be Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilonot, Ki Adoma Eitzah Sodeh.